Hi, I'm Dave Violante, and I'm here with John Kivlan. I'm a paramedic and have a public health degree.
Hi, I'm Sean. So, yeah, like Dave, I've been a paramedic for about 10 years in New York City, and we're going to talk today about how we got involved in international work and how we ended up traveling across the world after disasters as paramedics, as part of the NYC Medics Organization, to places Pakistan, Kashmir, and most recently Haiti after the earthquakes there.
Right. So I've been a paramedic for many years. I'm not going to say how many, but it's been a long time. And it's great to be in paramedicine for quite some time because you get to see some of the changes that are involved over time. And for me, being involved internationally came from an instructor who is a physician, a plastic surgeon in my paramedic program. And she had several sons that died from HIV transfusions back in the 80s when HIV was largely not really known. And so she wanted to eventually get away from some of that and traveled to Africa to go on safari and found a lot of public health need out there. And one of those public health needs was that a lot of people were being injured and killed in road traffic accidents and open fires and that sort of thing and didn't have access to health care. So what she said in one of our medic programs was, well, what they really need out there are paramedics. And so for a number of us, we thought, hey, what we really need to do is try and get out there and do what we're doing here, but to a population that really, really needs it. And so that was my initiation into it. That was back in 93. It was our first trip out to East Africa. And we've been going back since teaching pre-hospital care, teaching in-hospital triage, advanced programs and advanced cardiac life support and trauma and that sort of thing. And then eventually working into system development as I began getting a little bit more education and looking at public health as a broad issue. While you can do a lot of really good work for an individual on the ground in one setting, you can really make a huge sweeping change for a community and for a group of communities and nationally by making system changes. And so that was my initiation into work abroad. Sean, how about you?
And I found the same thing, that being a paramedic was always and still is the best job in the world to me because we get to help people and affect people's lives on a daily basis and really make a difference to the people who need it most. And when I got the opportunity to travel to Pakistan, it was very much on a whim. There was a group of people who had been in Hurricane Katrina helping, and they got asked by the World Health Organization if they knew a group of people who would want to rapidly respond to the Kashmir area after the earthquake that occurred there in 2005. So I signed up and ended up traveling out there. And what I found surprised me. I found that as a paramedic, it allowed me the skills to adapt into very chaotic areas that didn't have much infrastructure after the earthquake with very limited supplies, very difficult situations, and just help people and treat them constantly. But what I really learned out in Pakistan was that as a paramedic, we were able to help individual people, but there was a larger need than that. There was a huge public health need. People needed not just medical care, but they needed food, shelter, water. They needed lives. They needed occupations. They needed infrastructure. And we were able to help out with a lot of that. And I brought that back with me when I came back from that first trip. And it really inspired me to go on and learn more about the larger public health system. And not just the larger system, but how EMS plays such an integral role in that. And over the past few years, I've realized that really what we do in EMS is very unique in the American healthcare system, in a way where we're kind of the sink drain of the healthcare system. People don't need appointments to see us. They don't need to insurance. They don't need a car or a bus ride. They just call 911 and we show up. So there's no access barrier. So we see everybody and we can help everybody and we can transition them to the care that they need. And I think that as EMS takes a more solidified role in the United States as it becomes more developed as a profession, that's something that we all need to think about, is how we can not just medically treat people, but how we can treat the whole person and look at their living situation, their food situation, can they get their medications, or is their house safe, and what we can do about that. And a lot of that I took from my international experience and have applied it here.
Yeah, Sean makes a great point with that. And he and I both went to Pakistan, and then we also both went to Haiti. And the experiences that you get as a paramedic doing some primary care and then some not so primary care. I mean, you have some emergent care that you take care of crush injuries and lacerations and whatnot, but it's more so than just wrapping up a wound, splinting a fracture, and then, you know, traipsing off to the hospital. In a lot of these places, there's no hospital to traipse off to, and so you have to do some further care, and maybe that involves suturing, and maybe that involves debridement and giving antibiotics and using a lot of medications that necessarily you wouldn't be used to or wouldn't use in the 5 to 20 minute to 40 minute time that you're with someone in the back of an ambulance. And so that was very different, where not only did we bring healthcare that was immediate and emergent, but also to then an extent preventive out into these areas. But we brought those lessons back for us in terms of being prepared and looking at a holistic picture of an individual and, you know, what can we do for that individual back here in the U.S.? We're looking at a lot of issues where in the healthcare system, you know, we're that safety net. And the hospital is that safety net. Well, does that mean that in the near future, in the distant future, potentially we're going to be broadening our scope of practice so that we take care of the people out in the field as our first access? Let's look at the house. Do they have other services that we should bring in that they need? Do we end up writing a prescription with a physician and then giving it to the person there at the point of service and then going back into service so that we can help somebody else so that that person doesn't need a transport to the hospital, and we don't have to burden the healthcare system here anymore? And that's happening in other countries, and that's something that I've brought away from this as well from the public health side of that broadened scope of practice. And so for me, that's been a huge education that you know, we both have actually brought back to our communities here.
And the broadened scope of practice is a good point. A lot of people feel that it needs to be legislated upon or it needs to be set as a protocol, but we can already broaden our scope of practice in our everyday experiences. All you have to do is take the extra time when you show up at somebody's apartment to find out, why did they really call 911? Why are they calling 911 once a week and having ambulances show up? Maybe you can find the underlying problem just by talking to them. We have to realize that responding to very emergent situations is only a small part of what we do in EMS. The larger picture is that we're out there to help the society as a whole to get the access that they need. And I think this is a new role that EMS is beginning to take on and really needs to embrace. And it's something that I've learned from traveling and from seeing how we could do so much with so little in Pakistan and Haiti. And that sometimes just listening to somebody and hearing their problems and asking them what they need, which might not be a medication or an albuterol treatment or a splint. It might be they just needed somebody to talk to or they needed some advice. Is something that we can all do in our everyday practice to make us more complete as EMS providers and make a more complete system that better helps the people.
Yeah, and you know, something that else that comes to mind with that is that as we broaden our scope into public health, it's not doing it at the cost of anybody else. It's doing it in addition to the other healthcare providers that are out there. And one thing that I learned working abroad, especially in disaster scenarios, was that everybody works together. And it doesn't matter that I'm a paramedic and you're a nurse and this guy is a doc and this other person is a tech. It all takes everybody to take care of the individual who, at the end of the day, is the reason that we're there for. And that has to come back as well, that we have to work with other people and with other organizations, not taking away from them and trying to do our own thing or let them do their own thing. It all really is working together.
So the first thing that you notice when you arrive in any of these disaster places in a foreign country is that you're not the only one showing up from another country. There's people coming from all over the world to help. And coordination becomes a very difficult issue, especially when you have people from 50 different countries speaking 50 different languages, and you need to all achieve a common goal at the same time, preventing redundancy and overlap and wasting resources. It's also fascinating to see how many people come and drop what they're doing in their lives and will come and help out immediately. It's really amazing. But the experience for us was when we showed up and we needed to find an area that was underserved and needed help and wasn't already being taken care of. And it was hard because when you drive through a place like Port-au-Prince after the earthquake, everything is destroyed. The entire city is leveled. And you see the first block you go to, you think, well, we could just stop here and set up shop and start treating people. But you want to find the best place for your resources. And through coordination with the WHO, we were able to identify an area in City Militaire where we located a school courtyard and set up a clinic there, and basically just put an open sign up on the school, and which we didn't even need because they saw us coming through the village and unloading supplies, and before we could even begin to unpack our boxes, we had a line of hundreds of people looking for medical treatment, and we just got to work, and we worked all day treating everything. There was the initial phase, there would be a lot of injuries, crush injuries, lacerations, wound infections, but also many respiratory infections because now people were inhaling all of this dust. There was an urban environment that everything was crushed and there was just dust everywhere. So people were having horrible respiratory problems. And also a lot of it was just counseling and well checks and primary care. You had diabetics that now their house collapsed. They had no diabetic medication. Hypertensives, that people with hypertension that didn't have their medication now and their blood pressures would be 300 over 200. It was ridiculous, some of the things that we would see. And you do what you can to help them out.
Yeah, absolutely. Another facet of this is that the people in all of these locations and places where we've been also want to help out their fellow person. So we had a lot of people come up to us and say, listen, I know English, I know French, and I know Spanish, so I'll be an interpreter. And, you know, they want to help out their fellow citizen. So that's this, it's a human touch where it's not just clinically treating somebody in a very sterile way. It's reaching out and putting your hand on the shoulder and saying, I'm here for you. Doesn't matter where I come from. Doesn't matter where you are. What do you need? And taking care of the individual that way. And the people there really, as a community and as families, help to take care of each other just as much. And it was really important. So those who were really ill, they came to the front of the line. And it wasn't by their own doing. It was by the other people in line saying, you need to be up front first. And so that was something that's just really amazing and struck out for me that, you know, we get blasted every day here in the U.S. with so much in TV and marketing and this and that. And I personally feel that we're losing that family and that community connection that a lot of other places have. And that's something that we can really take away. And it's something I found to be very strong in a lot of other places where we've been.
And because the people were so great everywhere we went, it was always difficult to pick up and move. And in reality, we had to remember that with our training, we were more of acute care providers, and we weren't there for the long term. So after 2 days in that first clinic, we had pretty much treated everybody that needed to be treated, which was over 1,000 people. But as the line diminished, we realized our work here was done, and we picked up and found a new place. And we were lucky enough to hook up the U.S. military, who has provided us with some maps, and we started going to the IDP camps, which are the internally displaced persons camps, where everybody was setting up. These are the tent cities that you see on TV, and with thousands and thousands of people in them. And we would just go from one camp to the other, get dropped off at the beginning, and walk through it, and find all the people that couldn't get out of their tents to get to medical care. So we would find people who have been laying in tents since the earthquake with broken legs, pregnant women with leg fractures that couldn't get up to find treatment. It was pretty amazing, some of the things that you would find behind these tents. And that was where our skill set really came into play, is that we were such a small and portable team that we had all of our equipment on our backs. And we just walked through these and stopped from one tent to the other and treated people as we went all day long. And I felt like we were able to access a population that nobody else was able to access or would have been able to access.
Sean brings up a great point with this too, because if we were trying to do this on our own, it really wouldn't work. And by liaising with other organizations on the ground, it really made a lot of this possible. So when we ran out of medications that we brought, we worked with other organizations like AmeriCares and USAID and a number of others to get medications that we could use. The U.S. military had the vehicles to get through the blocked roadways and around areas that nobody else could access, where a lot of patients were and where they really needed the help. And we could provide the medical care. They couldn't. They could provide the vehicles. We didn't have. And so that gave us the ability to access populations in a very safe way and get these people the help they needed. And there were a lot of people that had some really serious injuries. I remember one gal that had a fractured arm, a fractured femur, ankle, pelvic fracture, and a depressed skull fracture. And she was just laying down in her tent. And no one, she couldn't get out. No one could take her anywhere because of the injuries she sustained. And when people heard that we were around, they came to us and said, hey, you have to go see this gal. This is where she is. You really need to take care of her. And that's exactly what we did. And we all worked as a team to get at the end of the day, the patient who really needed it, the care that they needed.
How long were you there in Haiti?
I was there for 10 days, from January 20th to the 30th. David had gone down earlier as part of the assessment team, if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, I was... One of the things that's really important to do when you go into a disaster situation is to be able to know what resources you need, see what's happening on the ground, liaise with other organizations so that you guys can share resources and really effectively and efficiently use the resources that are there. And so that's what we did. We had a three-person team go in and set up the Port-au-Prince area and figure out where the most need was, how we could liaise with other organizations, how we could get our clinical team there and have them be used effectively, make sure they were safe, make sure that they could be fed. We had to be totally self-sufficient. And so we couldn't use the resources that were in short supply because they were really for the people that were in the communities that needed them. We had to bring our own resources and be self-sufficient that way. Make sure we have all those. Make sure it was safe. Make sure that they had places to work and we had the other organizations to work with. So that was an important facet. So I was there for probably about 2 weeks on that trip.
And then?
Did you land on the, how soon after the earthquake were you on the ground?
The earthquake happened on the 12th and we were there by the, I believe it was the 16th, we were on the ground, which is a good time to be there because things are starting to form in the health cluster systems and people are starting to get on the ground and you can start working in teams to know what's happening, where, when, why, and how. And it really, it's a cluster. I mean, they call it a cluster system and it really is until that sort of gets worked out to know who's doing what.
Is it difficult to know that you're arriving several days into this situation that there's already people, who have been waiting?
It's tough.
Yeah.
It's also tough as an assessment team going in because you're a paramedic and you see someone who's injured and you want to help them, but you can't. You can't. And you have to really assess where the biggest need is, where you can really effectively and efficiently use your resources and work with others to affect the greatest care available, to the population. That was tough.
And I agree. That's probably the single most difficult thing as a healthcare provider is to show up somewhere. You just want to get to work, but you can't because there's all these other healthcare providers coming in that have the same goals, and you need to be organized and you need to coordinate to prevent overlap. Because if everybody just stopped at the first place and helped, who's going to help all the people past that? And it was a lesson that I learned when I was there, that you really need to fall into the larger structure and accept your role and go where you're told by the larger coordinating bodies, which allows the proper care to get to everybody that needs it, and then nobody gets neglected.
Is there any sense of cultural or, obviously you're in a totally different place in the world, but is there a point where a disaster gets so big that whether or not you're in Pakistan versus Haiti, that it's... How are they different? Do those scenes feel different? Or is there a point where it's such a huge thing and so many people are coming from all over the world that it is kind of just disaster?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
Yes and no. There are a lot of similarities. And David and I were actually just talking about this. And there's a lot of similarities between Haiti or Pakistan and I would imagine any other large-scale disaster area. Because the response is similar. The needs are similar. The lack of infrastructure, the chaos, it's really almost a common denominator of society. It reduces everybody to the same level. And it does remove a lot of cultural barriers there, which we've encountered in Pakistan, which is an Islamic country and a very large Islamic population. There are certain barriers, especially with men treating women and just a certain level of respect that needs to be taken, which we're not always accustomed to here in the U.S., but a lot of that in a disaster setting is overlooked as it's needed. But at the same time, it's so important to always respect those barriers, because one thing that I think we all tend to forget when we travel somewhere like this is we're on a mission. We feel that we're bringing great health care and great supplies, but we're also guests. And ultimately, this is their home, and we're just guests there, even though we are helping. And we always have to respect those cultural barriers or try to. Another thing is language, which I talked about earlier, but overcoming language is a lot less difficult than you'd think it would be, especially in a disaster. You draw, you make charades, and people, it's amazing how easy you can get a point across and how well it works. It was actually really surprising how little of a barrier language ends up becoming in a disaster, because everybody has a common goal.
Break out the Pictionary game.
Yeah.
It really works.
Yeah, those old charades lessons really, really helped out a lot.
They say that in a disaster response, there's two disasters. There's the disaster, and then there's the people coming in to help at the disaster, which is a disaster. And it's true. It really is. Until it all gets sorted out, it's just amazing chaos of everybody trying to figure out who's there, who can do what, and then go and do it. And that is a big issue. But
that's a big challenge.
But I think culturally, I've found this that, and sure, you know, Sean and I have talked about this as well. It's human beings. It's brothers and sisters. If I'm there to help you, people have opened their arms, their houses, their lives to us. And been so grateful, as much as we've been so grateful for them being there, knowing the community, knowing what the needs are, and helping us to help them. And I have no doubt that if there was something to happen in the U.S. where we needed their help and they could be there, wouldn't even be a thought. It would not. It would just happen. And that's just an amazing feeling.
And I'll add to that that I never really ever felt unsafe. And safety is obviously a huge concern traveling to some parts of the world as an American, as a non-local, as somebody who doesn't speak the language. But I never felt unsafe. People were just so helpful everywhere we went. They knew we were there to help. All they wanted to know is how they could help us help others. And it was really, really amazing. And everywhere that I've traveled, I've found that. Because really, in a disaster, it brings everybody together. It brings out the best in people. And all of a sudden, no matter what your problems were before, whatever personal problems that we all have, it takes all of those out of the picture for a minute. And we're all working towards a common goal. And we're all the same for a little while. And it's a pretty incredible feeling, I think.
I totally agree. Absolutely. And I think that Sean hit that right on the head. It's like being a family again and not worrying about all the other crap that's out there.
Open Airways podcasts are produced by FISDAP with support from emsresponder.com. All recordings express the opinions and experience of the speaker and do not constitute legal or medical advice. This and other recordings can be found at www.openairways.net.